welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 220th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 720th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of July 15th, 2021. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Martin takes the shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
All right, well, not a lot of options for the banner moment this week, given a pretty slow news week for IU basketball and basketball in general. However, I would say, and I don't know the exact class on this, but IU had its first potentially class of 2035, maybe 2036 recruit, maybe 2034 recruit on campus as Jordan Holes and his son, I believe his son Jackson, there were some video and pictures of them at Cook Hall. Anthony Lille was there kind of shooting in the background to one of them that I saw. And, you know, Jordan, a guy that is beloved in Bloomington, beloved by IU fans, and has really carved out a successful career for himself overseas, but always makes it back to Bloomington at some point in the summer. And it was kind of cool. I think this was one of the first times, at least, to, you know, kind of see him with his son there watching things and being able to show him that and share that part of his story and his past with him was cool to see. I can only assume that that the younger Holes will be asked not to shoot three-pointers until later in his career, as Jordan has talked about, was really important for him of not forcing that. But I think we can also assume that he's probably going to be able to have a pretty sweet stroke. So hopefully, you know, IU getting in early with him will pay dividends sometime down the line in the next, you know, 13 to 15 years, based on what his age is. But cool moment there. Glad they captured that. And that will be this week's banner moment. So with that, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. First, to my left.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach and it's Tonsoni time.
Coach, based on the comments you gave us in our text about the weather that's hitting Delphi right now, I'm tempted to throw it to you as our resident meteorologist, but I'll let you get out whatever you want here before the thunderstorm, standard Midwest thunderstorm rolls through this evening there.
Yeah, you get 15 minutes out and you get a severe thunderstorm warning. You look out to the west and it's dark, at 8:30. It's going to be quite the night. So hopefully we can make it through. But it's summer. It's just, plodding along slowly. We can tell with the shows, you know, we're trying to find stuff to talk about, and we're all looking forward to what's coming up. I'm not a big recruiting guy. I do appreciate reading about guys that Indiana's looking at, just so I can get a little bit of a flavor of who's out there and kind of what Coach Woodson and staff are doing. And so that's been interesting to follow, both on the community and in a variety of web pages. And then again, you get little pieces of information. You get a new game in December, UNC Asheville, I believe. And so the schedule's getting closer and closer to things that we can then start talking about, the predictions and things like that, and tough games and strength of schedule. So it's just a lot is up in the air with the program, and a lot of it is still positive. And, you know, there are going to be some bumps in the road as you go, as someone who has you in their top three decides to go elsewhere. And I just don't get too worked up about that at this point, because everyone's figuring everything out, and it's just a lot of anxiety to get going. And I think the Bahamas practices and games are really going to help. The most important thing is the team, but also with us fans, to have us be able to focus on things that we want to see.
All right. And to my left, or right, whichever the opposite of whatever I said the first time.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
All All right. He is Ryan Phillips. Ryan, what's on your mind this week?
Yeah, you know, there isn't a whole lot of basketball news to talk about. So to keep it on the IU track, I've got two things I want to talk about. I'll do the first one on the IU track. Hey, if you're following basketball recruiting and there's not much going on right now, start following IU football recruiting because there's a lot of good news there. It'll make you feel really good about what's going on over on that side of it. So I would say just go follow what's going on there. Tom Allen is racking up high level commits and doing a great job on that side of things while basketball is sort of still, you know, playing it out, figuring it out. And then the other thing I would say is there's some really good basketball going on right now. It's just not college basketball. The NBA finals has been great so far. And last night was a fantastic game. One of the best finals games I've seen in a long time. Game four, where the Bucks came back to win. Giannis had, I wrote about it, the big lead, had a, you know, sort of sensational star making moment with that blocked alley-oop at the rim. One of the cleanest, most perfect alley-oop blocks I've ever seen. Start checking it out. If you got nothing to do on a night when the finals is on, watch it. This is some pretty good basketball, and it's two teams I think a lot of people didn't think would be there, and other teams got injured. They stayed healthy, and that's what we got, but the ring count's just the same. So really, really good final so far. Really interesting. And yeah, if you need something to cheer you up this summer while it's storming in Indiana, go follow football recruiting. It's been really good and really impressive and the best we've seen in a long time.
Can't believe you were impressed by that block that you know, genius Skip Bayless was not impressed with at all based on a tweet that I saw.
Oh, my God, that
what
guy.
It was a lob. Yeah. If there was a way to prove you're just coming out just to say the opposite of what everybody else is, like, that was a great moment there. As if everybody didn't know that about him before. But idiotic statement that was.
Go to the big lead. Go to the NBA tab and just scan down, you'll find the thing I did kind of like a step-by-step breakdown of that block, and it's unbelievable because Ayton is 6'11", 7 feet, and he can jump, and he caught the ball above the square on the side and goes to put it down, and Giannis had like recovered from the free throw line and goes up, almost blindly jumps in, and times it perfectly. It's one of the coolest things defensively I've ever seen, and it was a two-point game at that point, and that gave all the momentum to the Bucks, and they closed it out at home. But it was just one of those plays, and I compared it to sort of superstar. I mean, Giannis has won two MVPs, but I don't think anybody can point to one singular play he's had that's like, oh, that's a superstar. He's just really good, and he puts up great numbers, and, you know, he's a great defender and all that. But, like, Michael Jordan had the shot. LeBron James had, you know, it was like game five of the Eastern Conference Finals in, like, 2007, where he scored 25 points in a row against the Pistons. You know, I mean, like, everybody has these. Larry Bird had that inbounds he stole. And then LeBron obviously had the chase down block. Kobe and Shaq had that lob against Portland that gets shown on every highlight. That was Giannis's one of those moments where it's just, there's like three people on earth who could have made that block. And he did it perfectly in game four of a pivotal game of the NBA finals, where if the Bucks lose that, they're down 3-1. And if they win it, it's an even series and we can go get it. You know, we, as fans, are going to like dig into this. So it was just one of those singular moments. That's just like, oh, that's amazing. And if you're missing these finals, they're really good. It's good basketball. The Suns play up tempo, the Bucks play defense, and it's really a clash in styles. And you've got some all time great players. And Chris Paul, Giannis, I think he's going to be a legend by the time he's done. Booker is like the new hotshot scorer. I mean, there's some good stuff to watch. And then Chris Middleton, super steady. It's been fun, and it's not the finals that everybody wanted. I know that, you know, the people who want big names wanted the Lakers and the Nets. That was like the odds on favorite to do it. People wanted to see all those superstars go at each other, but this has been really entertaining basketball, even though it's not the names that necessarily everybody wanted.
All right, so coming up on the show this week, we've got a few Hoosier headlines to hit. For our main topic, we're going to look through some aspects of the team and see which ones we're all in on. We posed this question in our community, and so got some good answers from there. So we'll kind of react to what some of you put in there and just look at some pieces of the team that we're excited about. And then, of course, we'll answer your questions. A lot of non-basketball questions this week, which should be good. So all of that coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. And so as we do that, we do not have an ad this week. I would echo Coach's message he's been given about just, you know, kind of looking out for each other, finding somebody to, you know, do a nice gesture for that may be unexpected, might brighten their day a little bit. I think those things are certainly important. So, you know, look for somebody over the next week or so to, you know, kind of give an unexpected call or text you to check on and see how they're doing. I think those things can certainly mean a lot. So with that, we'll get into our Hoosier headlines. Not a ton this week, as we talked about, guys. IU did a game announced against UNC Asheville on the 29th of December. A good opportunity, dependent upon, I may try to go down for this. Usually for us, when people are, you know, we're out of school, students, they're out of school. Sometimes between the holidays is a good opportunity to be able to go. So UNC Asheville again, the 29th, they're 232nd in Torvik's preseason rankings. They finished 244th in KenPom last year out of the Big South. So that'll be another, I think, the eighth game now that's been confirmed or at least reported from a scheduling standpoint. So that's out there. Lenardi put out another preseason bracket. IU is a 10 seed in that, I think, playing Xavier, because I have a friend who is a big Xavier fan who texted me that matchup. New president Pamela Witten visited, at the very least, the IU men's and women's basketball teams as well as the football team earlier this week. I know those were documented a little bit more than others on social media. So that was there. And then recruiting news, Jalen Washington committed to North Carolina. So, you know, Coach, any of those really stand out to you, whether it be the scheduling, bracketology, recruiting, what jumped out to you there?
Well, and I'm really excited about the new president. I think she is a breath of fresh air for Indiana University in all aspects of the university. And I just like a leader who shows concern for everything in a university and meeting with the athletic department and coming down to the to Assembly Hall and Cook Hall and Memorial Stadium and doing it that way. I think leaders need to listen when they first come into a position. And I'm sure she's met with academic leaders and the like already as well. But that's just a positive sign for me, and I wish her nothing but success, and appreciate what I hear is a real support for athletics, and we'll see how that goes. So that's the one. I'm always interested in the schedule, obviously from a fan standpoint and a bracketology standpoint, to analyze what direction they're going to go in Coach Woodson's first year. Is going to be a little easier schedule to get things going? Are they going to add some tough teams here? You know, they're running out of spots yet to play some real tough teams besides the three they already have. So that's the other thing that's really grabbing my attention this week.
Ryan, what about you?
It's losing Jalen Washington, obviously. I mean, look, that was going to be a tough battle, especially with a new coaching staff. But, you know, anytime the top player in the state leaves the state or goes somewhere other than Indiana, that's a blow. And, you know, it's great that he's not going to Michigan State or Purdue or Ohio State or one of the Big Ten teams. He, you know, if you're going to lose him, you want to lose him to a school you're not going to have to necessarily face. But that's the top player in Indiana, and you got to get those guys. And at some point, I swear, Indiana is going to grab one of these top guys from Northern Indiana. It's going to happen eventually. It has to. But it's a big miss. And I know that this coaching staff is a little behind the eight ball with that, but they had guys who had been in contact with them previously, and they just lost. And you've got to win some of these top level recruiting business. If you want to take Indiana back to a national championship level, you're going to have to grab some of these guys. And so missing Jalen Washington really hurts. He's going to a good school in North Carolina. So you can't be like mad and it's out of conference. So you can't be too mad about it. But eventually at some point you got to hit on some of these guys and you've got to be able to grab these guys. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this recruiting class unfolds now that Indiana is a little thinner this year than usual and at the top. And Washington was really the big guy that they were throwing everything at. And to lose out, that hurts. It really does. So it'll be interesting to see how this class unfolds now that he's off the board. And they're really going to have to pick up somebody in another area to sort of fill that void as the alpha dog of the class.
One of the things that happens with recruiting is it's relationships. And Indiana has, you know, one coach that has been on staff for a while, been recruiting kids, but now it's a different system. You know, you look at North Carolina, and they're staying in house, so that relationship has been made. And the other thing that I think sometimes we got to just be honest about is his recruiting at the beginning to recruit the players back to Indiana was fantastic, and getting Tamar Bates was fantastic. And then the expectation is Coach Woodson has this perfect pitch every single time. And in all honesty, that just can't happen. A lot of these guys are going to go places.
You're going to miss.
You know, you're going to make mistakes as a new staff on who you offer and what you do to try to sway them in. And you really have a better chance with guys a couple years down the road where you're on even fighting, even keel with the other programs. You're not coming in and trying to make up a lot of ground. So that's why it's disappointing for me. But again, that's part of the problem of changing coaches and bringing in an outsider. North Carolina stayed in house, and that's a little bit easier to transition in that situation. It's the same what Duke's going to do. Those relationships have been built for 2 or 3 years. And so I still think also, Coach Woodson,
they are two guys known for their recruiting.
Absolutely.
Too, both those schools did. So.
Yeah, and then I think Coach Yah and the guys, they'll get it going. It's just going to be a little bit slower, and that's where I'm, again, cautiously optimistic about the season too, because the staff has to get together and be on the same page in recruiting, offense, and defense, and I think you're seeing that here with some of those. But now, you know, Hood Schifino looks like he might be a solid player to add. Yep. And again, I know you need bigs, and I'm a tall guy myself, but – you know, I'd rather play with all guards and no bigs than all bigs and no guards. I think we've seen that. So if we miss on some bigs, I don't worry as much.
I think that I'm a tall guy myself is a good drop, Jared, when you listen. I think that's no. Look, I'm not saying that this is a look into the future that they missed on Jalen. Watch, I'm just saying at some point you've got to hit on those guys.
Right.
We got to hit on those guys. And
it's something that Archie Miller didn't. I mean, he tried to get those top guys and he never did. And it cost him his job. He missed
on some of them.
At some point, you got to start. You got to bring him in.
Yeah. You have to hit on those guys. And again, I don't think that Woodson and staff are bad recruiters. I definitely don't think that. I think they did as Coach mentioned, they did a fantastic job bringing those guys back into the fold. You went out and you grabbed, you know, a couple guys and via transfer, got Tamar Bates. I think they'll be good at this. I do think they'll be good at this. It's just, you know, anytime the top kid in Indiana doesn't go to Indiana, you're gonna be disappointed about it. But again, yeah, you're right. The transition, they're gonna get in with the 23 guys and the 24 guys and sort of build those relationships and be on even footing with everybody else. And that's how you really establish things. And of course, a kid's going to be more comfortable with somebody who's been recruiting him for 3 years than a guy who's been doing it for 6 months. No questions about it. I also think that Washington was tight with North Carolina all along. I mean, that's what you heard. I think he was intrigued by the Indiana idea, especially early, and said some nice things about it. But I think that he had his mind made up about North Carolina for a while. Again, none of that is a reflection on the efforts of the coaching staff. I'm just saying eventually, as Indiana, regardless of who the coach is, as Indiana, you got to grab some of these guys, especially in the northern half of the state. When there's a top player from Fort Wayne or Gary or wherever, you got to be able to get them. And Indiana has not consistently gotten them in a long time. So that's got to be a trend that changes at some point.
I think recruiting is tough too, because you've heard through the vibes and other places too, where they offered this guy early and then offered this guy later. And there are some, you know, coaches in Indiana were scratching their head and everything. And I don't think that shows a problem. I just show that they're not perfect. And you're generally not perfect when you come from the NBA and got to recruit for the first time and you got 5 or 6 voices chiming in. You're going to have some problems. I think those things are true. I think Indiana's recruiting has struggled a little bit this summer in just continuity, it seems like. But I don't know that that's not to be expected in this situation. So I don't
think
that's
a
horrible sign.
I think the staff and that this whole program needs to develop the chemistry. They need to know each other, get to know each other's strengths, get to know, you know, so they can vibe together. And then when they have their recruits on campus or on the phone or are there doing a present, they're all kind of used to each other and can play off each other. These guys are being slammed together for the first time. So it's not always going to be smooth. There's going to be bumps in the road. You've got new guys above the coaching staff, you know, doing the operations stuff and all that. And so it's just a matter of developing that communication, developing that sort of chemistry as a staff. That takes time. And that's why a lot of times I know like fans will say things like, and I've said it before, is like, hey, you got to fire this assistant because he's not getting it done and all that. And the coach will, and you know, the program needs a change and the coach won't fire the guy. Well, there's usually a reason. It's that, well, this may not be perfect, but we have chemistry. We kind of know how each other work. We all kind of get along, things like that. It's better than the bringing in an unknown quantity that we don't know how it's going to go and how it'll all fit together. So that's why sometimes you hang on to assistant coaches that might be underperforming a little, is because, well, no, he works with the team really well. He works with the rest of the guys here really well. So, and also, you know, sometimes they'll bring in a coach who they know from a previous job and you're like, well, there are better, you know, higher profile guys available. Yeah. But he doesn't know how to work with that guy. And so staff chemistry is as important as team chemistry. And I think that just needs to develop. Whenever you have a new coaching staff, that's going to develop. And that's why you see when guys go from, you know, a smaller school to a big school, they bring half their staff with them, you know, at least, and then we'll maybe grab a elite recruiter or something like that. And it's because they know how to work with those guys.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one thing you might see in the short term is, you know, the ability to use a transfer portal. So even if there's kind of hiccups in the road from a recruiting standpoint now, you know, maybe they can paper over that a little bit with some work in the transfer portal as the staff gets into sync and sets them up better for, you know, future classes. Cause it is to your point, you know, kind of late to get in on some of these guys that may have been recruited by somebody for a while. So there's the ability to patch some holes that way. And they did that certainly.
And they've done really well with it. They've done really well with the transfer portal so far.
Well, and I think the other thing, assuming the guys that come in, they're transferred in this year, do well, that's also a blueprint you can give to other guys next year that say, hey, we've had success in that realm versus, you know, we brought guys in, we either picked the wrong guys, they didn't end up getting the minutes they thought they were going to get. So I think, you know, hopefully success with guys like Xavier and Michael Durr and Miller Kopp this year, you know, can kind of help them become a little bit more of a transfer destination, if you will. And that can, you know, you still got to be able to recruit, but I think in this very near term, that might be a potential solution to help, you know, gloss over some of those things.
And here's a little bit unsung too from us fans. We always look at the commitments as the final scorecard. It, to me, the staff seems to be evaluating talent pretty well, and a sign that they're going to go after the best talent, because if Indiana's going to hang banner number six, they're going to need more Jimmys and Joes than what they've had. And so they're evaluating and they're willing to take shots in situations in this first year that were going to be difficult. And so while, you know, it may seem like it's slowing down and pausing a little bit, they're not shying away from going and spreading that net nationally, and trying to bring in the best talent. They're not getting it done, right now, but you got to think that, you know, with this staff, they're going to evaluate talent. It just comes to that, the chemistry that Ryan's talking about, of getting it done with your Zooms and your meetings and just the process of making offers and knowing what order to offer. And is it a hard offer or an offer contingent? There's so much that goes on with all that stuff that needs to be figured out. And this staff will get there, I'm sure.
Yep. All right. Well, that'll do it for our first segment. And when we come back, we're going to talk through some things that fellow fans are all in on about this year's team and figure out if we're all in with them. So we'll do that next. Stick with us here on the Assembly Call. All right. Welcome, everybody. Happy Thursday evening.
What's up, chat mob?
Coach, there's no rain pouring in from your ceiling, so that feels
no,
good.
No, it kind of, we've had an interesting thing, and I won't spend a lot of time on it, but storms have come up from the Purdue area, Lafayette area, and they've just split around Delphi for like 4 or 5 years. We've never gotten a whole lot. We got a lot of rain the other day, but we have never, the town of Delphi has missed some of the major stuff that has just been to the north and just been, and I texted Amy upstairs and she said, nah, it rained, but it looked like it skipped on us. So, yeah.
Ryan's back looking ridiculous. So thanks for
So Fernando Tatis's people sent me these. So I promised I'd wear them on the air for a minute. And yeah, that's it.
Those are really, I just had to, really something.
It's good. I think I can pull them off.
It's good look on you.
I don't know. I mean, I really want to flip a bat right now. It's just
you need the chain and the spin thing for the.
I can see the Hitman, but they actually see Hitmans were like wraparounds. These actually have like a fan. There were clear ones, but my new light is there was like a clear lens you can pop in, but my light is very bright, so I'm just, you know, kind of protecting my eyes a little bit. I do need the swag chain to spin after the home run. Did you guys watch the All Star game? Did anybody watch it?
I watched it.
We need an assembly call swag chain.
No, an AC
hard to pass around though in our current setup.
That would I think we should make hat. I think we should make hats like these with an A and a C.
I agree.
Them. I think we could do that. Maybe home field will start doing that. Do it with the like Alabama A script kind of thing. I think that would work. Or we could do IU block lettering. I don't know. What'd you guys think of the All-Star game?
It was something
you've never seen before. Guys started leading off and then pitching.
Yeah. I missed pieces of it because I had to go pick one of the kids up somewhere. But I mean, NL just cannot get it done. It's pretty much all.
It's insane because it's just an exhibition. How do they not do it? Like Tatis missed two home runs by about a millimeter on the bat, and then they had a couple other guys who hit the ball well, which is right at guys. I mean, Chris Bryant. 3-0 swinging with the bases loaded and flares one out to left and it gets caught. I mean, it is crazy.
Coach Marlowe's in the chat. Wasn't it the other way around when we were young, the National League on a long,
the National League has the longest win streak and the third longest win streak. And now the American League is in the second longest, but yeah, it was, I mean, What's hilarious and crazy is that the American League's won like, what is it, 8 in a row now? And all time, it's still like a 2-win difference. Like it's you know, even with all these wild swings, it basically evens out. And the run differential heading into this year's game all time was +3 for the American League. You'd figure like over all that time, they'd stretch it out at some point. But nope.
I tell you what, the changes they made to the home run derby have made it exciting for me.
It is. The only part that sucks.
The timing thing is good. The bonus.
I agree with all of that. The only issue is it is a not being there. You don't get to watch the home run because it's like halfway through its thing, and then they put. Yeah. They should like have to wait for it to drop before they pitch, so you can actually watch the whole thing.
I thought that's what they used to do, but then they can't hit as many because some of these are moonshots that take forever to land. So then they seem to have relaxed that
for sure
in the last couple of years. Where
I would say almost like stop the clock while it's in the air. So, I mean, they got to figure something out because it's like you're watching. Oh, that's a blast, and then you're back to watching the guy swing again. You know,
the only change I think I would make is in the first round, give everyone 3 minutes, and then take the four best. And then seed them one versus four, two versus three.
Then match them up.
Situation.
Yeah, because like, Salvi Perez, he hit like 30 and he didn't go. No, yeah. I mean, I like the bracket for the last four. I agree with that.
For the final four, just give everyone a chance to.
But no, at this rate, nobody's beating Pete Alonso. That guy is built solely for the home run derby. I mean, that was unbelievable.
Everyone's got to keep going for their 3 minutes because if you're second in a bracket and someone hit 13, you're going to quit at 14. And it's great to see Alonso go for 72 home runs in three minutes or whatever he did.
So I think next year, Tatis isn't doing it this year because he had a shoulder injury and it's only like 75%. And so the team was basically like, hey, take it easy. But next year, he's going to do it. I think he's going to convince Guerrero Jr. To do it because they're like buddies. I think he's going to, and I think that Acuna will do it. I think Soto would again. I'm sure Ohtani will do it again. They might say next year, hey, I don't want to pitch though. Like, you know, I'm going to go, I'll DH, but I'm not going
to
pitch.
I'd love to see Schwarber.
Dude, I was surprised they didn't try and get Schwarber in when they started doing replacements this year. But yeah, so I think that the top level guys will do it next year, and a couple of them sat out this year.
My money's on Alonso.
Yeah, he's gonna like I said. He it's just what he was born to do. Like was hit the home, not necessarily to hit, but to hit the home run. And he might be the greatest to have ever done. I know Ken Griffey's won 3-1, but Alonso just looks so at ease up there. He could have kept going for an hour.
My name's Pete Alonso, and I hit dingers. that's all it has to be. Man.
They call me Big Pete.
Yeah, Big Pete.
But All right. You guys are ready.
Also, USA soccer match about to start for anybody who's.
Who are they playing? How about Italy, Ryan?
They're playing Martinique. Is that who they're playing tonight?
Martinique. Italia. Woo. Vittoria. That was awesome. So, get England. All right. I'm ready whenever he goes.
All right, cool. Give me 1 second.
Hey, this is Max Bielefeld, Big Ten champ and better than advertised Sixth Man of the Year in 2016. And speaking of better than advertised, join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
And welcome back to the assembly call. So how do you keep up with the fire hose of information that comes out almost every day about IU basketball? It's crazier in the offseason and even crazier during the season. Well, we've got your back. We send out a free weekly email newsletter on Sunday mornings, rounds up the most important and interesting IU basketball stories in the previous week to keep you up to date on your Hoosiers. Over 8,000 of your fellow IU fans are already on the list, and we want you to be on there as well. So go to join.assemblycall.com to subscribe for free now. That's join.assemblycall.com. You can also text IU to 66866. That's IU to 66866. All right, I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and Ryan Phillips. And Jared posed a question in our community today about asking, you know, are there things that you're all in on with this team? And so I tried to compile these as best I could. So if there's anybody who put one in there later, I may have missed it. But I wanted to get these and figure we'd just kind of react to them as we went and see where the three of us fall on these. So there are... Most of these were all in things they were all in on. He also gave the option to put something you're all out on. So I'll probably skip that because there wasn't too much of that. But in terms of being all in, so Jared actually put the first one in to get started. So we'll do his first. He said he's all in on Tamar Bates being a major contributor during Big Ten play. And he put parenthetically, that means top five in minutes and scoring. So coach, where do you come down on this one? Are you in on that?
Yeah, I think if Indiana's going to be a team that contends, I think you have to play your talented players. Now, Tamar's going to have to come in and you know, learn what's going on, and the college game is different. But, you know, a five-star, yeah, I think he's going to have to play. So I'm all in on that.
Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, I'm all in. I think that by the end of the season, he's going to be that guy. That he might be coming off the bench, but I think that he's going to be a huge contributor because of his ability to score, his defensive ability, and just his enthusiasm that he brings. I think he's going to be one of those guys like Race Thompson where just his attitude changes the makeup of what's on the court for Indiana. Like, it just rubs off on other guys. I mean, there are times, you know, Race Thompson this year was the most impactful player on the floor and didn't put up any statistics worth.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply.
At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here.
Noting, you know, he'd have like, oh, that was an impact block, or that was a big rebound, or, you know, he had a big bucket at one point, but he wasn't, you know, double doubling. But his enthusiasm, energy, and hustle on the court just took the team to another level. I think Bates is going to be kind of like that guy, where it might not be dive on the floor plays, but it's just an attitude. And this team hasn't had a dog in a while. And I think that that's what Tamar Bates is.
I'll say I'm not quite all in on that one. I think he's probably right around that maybe 5-6 range in terms of minutes and scoring as you start laying out, you know, where guys are going to play. I do think, you know, given the competition that he played in prep school and some of those things, he might be a little bit more ready to step into some of those situations than others. But I think it, you know, there's also a lot of guys that, you know, he's got a pass to be top five in minutes and scoring. So I think he'll be in the mix. I certainly think he's going to be a key rotation player. I just don't know if I'm quite that that bullish on it. So I'll say out for now, but we'll see. Luke said, I'm all in on Rob Phinisee stepping up and being the star we all know he could be. Phinisee tweeted this week about a book he's reading called The Intentional Mindset. Tweeted, this book is helping me get ready for the upcoming season by getting my mind right. So I thought that was interesting. The foreword is by Greg Gard, so do what you will with that information. But anyway, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the mental piece of things with Rob, and how Dane Fyfe has talked about some of those things with Rob as well. So I think it's I think it's interesting, and that he's reading you know, a book like that, and kind of acknowledging some of those things. So what do you guys think about Rob? I don't know that he takes the leap and becomes a, you know, a star in that sense of the word. But, you know, Ryan, what do you think is maybe realistic expectations for Rob this year, assuming that, you know, he gets his, you know, some of the confidence things and stuff that we've talked about, you know, puts those behind him a bit. What do you think is reasonable to expect from him?
It's hard for me to be bullish on him just because we've seen several years of expecting him to take that next leap. I know, and not doing it. I know it's a new coaching staff. I know he's surrounded by a lot more talent, and especially there's pressure off him in the backcourt now. It's just hard for me to jump in and be like, he's all of a sudden going to be the thing Rob needs to be. It's forget the points, the assists, the minutes, what he needs to be consistent. One from one game to the next, we need to know what to expect from Rob Phinisee, whether it's all good or all bad, because then you know how to handle it. And the problem is that he would go three bad games and then look like an all Big Ten player. And then you'd be like, oh, he's turned the corner, and then be okay, and then have two bad games, and all of a sudden pop back up. And that's hard to deal with. I mean, that's harder to deal with than a guy who just doesn't get it done, because you can't just replace him in the lineup, because some games you're just kind of like, well, you know, maybe this is the game where he steps up. At Iowa last year, he looked like a fringe all Big Ten player. With his defense and some clutch shots and some driving and this and that and the other thing. And he just never reached it the rest of the year consistently. So I would say I'm out on Phinisee. I don't know what he has to do to be considered a success, but I would just put some level of consistency. You know, don't hurt the team when you're on the floor. Like, be giving the effort, be giving the confidence. Because look, when Rob is confident and bouncing around, he can knock down shots. He can put the ball in the hoop on a drive. He's not going to be a knockdown 50% three, you know, 48% 3-point shooter. He's not going to be the greatest driver in the world, but he can get it done at both of those things. And he can be an elite defender. That's what he can do when he's right. And Indiana needs all of those things, but it's just so hard to see him all of a sudden just turning a corner and being the guy. I hope he does. I hope to God he does. It would be so rewarding for him and every Indiana fan who has wanted that for so long. But I have a tough time seeing it happening.
Coach, thoughts on Rob?
Yeah, I'm out on the keyword being a star. I'm not out on him being an efficient member of a winning basketball team. And I think Ryan just hit on all the things that he needs to do to be efficient. And number one is mental consistency. And then his physical play needs to be consistent. Do I believe he can get there? Absolutely. But all he needs to do is be able to be a lockdown defender and run the offense and play with a little more pace and hit a shot. He doesn't have to be a 20-point star. So the key word in that comment there for me and being out on Rob Phinisee, I don't think he needs to be a star. I think he needs to be a good, solid contributor. And he has at times, and he hasn't. And that goes back to what Ryan said about needing to be consistency. Where he will star, if he's playing well, is consistent defensively on a ball handler, which is just a must in order to be competitive in the Big Ten. And then, you know, if he's average offensively, I think that's better than what he has been in the past.
Yeah, I think I fall in line with you, Coach. It's in my head, it's how can he become a key rotation player that you know, and it kind of blends together what you guys said, that you know what you're going to get from on a, you know, game in, game out basis. And I think having a little bit less pressure on him to really run the show this year and being able to play a bit more off the ball, focus on defense, potentially spot up shooting and some of those scenarios that I think he's rated out pretty well at in some of the other metrics, you know, giving him a few things to do and really allowing him to excel at those things will go a long way. Cause I think he just didn't ever, just wasn't able to flourish in amidst what Archie Miller was asking him to do, whether that's system based, how he was asking, whatever case may be,
you know, put way too much on his shoulders
bits, you know, those bits and pieces, but he just, yeah, I think it was just asking a guy in some ways to do more than he was really capable of. And I think, hopefully the new staff is able to, you know, hone in on the things that he really does well and focus on those. Next one, Sally and Jeff both had pretty similar takes on this. All in for a sped up style of play. And of course, all in on somebody, anybody, hopefully being able to shoot the ball. And yeah, Jeff kind of said the same thing, playing more up tempo, shooting the three better. Coach, I think everybody would be very excited about that. So there's no question that we're all in on the excitement for that. Are you all in and it actually coming to fruition?
I'm all in and it happening. And I think it has to happen. I think college basketball is played with a little bit of pace. Good college basketball is played with pace. And you do need to be efficient in the half court come tournament time. But, you know, North Carolina is known for its break. Michigan State known for its break. You know, you look at Gonzaga and they not just pace in a fast break, but your ability to penetrate, drive the floor, kick, and get open shots early in shot clock situations. So I think we've been too methodical for a while. So I'm all in and going there. But what leads me to be all in there is I think Coach Woodson and staff has tried to get some downhill guys. I think Tamar Bates can get downhill. I think Xavier Johnson can get downhill. And, you know, Lander and Phinisee will learn. I don't think we saw their capabilities last year. So if those guys can really be penetrating guards, then I think that opens up a little more free-flowing offense. So, yeah, I believe that's going to happen. Is it going to happen to the point of great success? I can't promise that.
Yeah, I count me in as all in for this. I think maybe like Sally and Jeff kind of wanting it to happen, wishing it to happen. But I do think you'll see, more pace. I think you'll see more spacing, and I think that'll lead to more 3-point shooting. So just a matter of whether they go in or not. But I'm in on the concept for sure. All right, Sean.
Yeah, I think as a team, I would say I think as a team, I think they'll shoot better. I don't know if individual guys will take jumps because we haven't seen what this staff's development processes like. As far as the sped up style of play, when he was a head coach, Mike Woodson for the NBA was actually pretty slow. Their offense was actually pretty slow, but that's for the NBA. It will not be slower than it was under Archie Miller. There's no way. I mean, how could you be? But I will say that it's not like we're all of a sudden going to be running gunning,
right?
You know, top 50 in tempo. I sincerely doubt that. But I do think there's going to be more pace certainly. And as it's coming from an NBA system, you're going to get out and transition more. You have to, if you're coming from that kind of world. So I do think it'll be faster. do think the team will shoot better. So I'm all in on that. But I think that people need to temper their expectations when they say that the tempo is going to be faster. It's not going to be the Golden State Warriors out there. It's going to be a more, you know, toned down up-tempo offense.
Sean, I'm all in on TJD becoming the All-American we know he can be. Ryan, what do you think I know it's a little bit hard to gauge, you know, preseason-wise. I think he'll be on an All-American team. I don't know if he would be, first-team All-American from a national perspective. Where do you kind of see him potentially fitting in that pecking order to start the season?
Yeah, I think that people are going to be talking about him to start the season because I think nobody really expected him to come back. And so I think there'll be a lot of talk about he came back to do this with Indiana, Mike Woodson. Like, I think that I think that story about Mike Woodson, you know, talking to him and telling him all his faults and all that stuff will get a lot of play. I think that he's an All-American this year. He'll make one of the three teams. I think that he's going to get better because I think that he's had his flaws pointed out. And I don't think the development of his game it will be better. I'll put it that way to not put a negative spin on it. It will be better. And I think he's an All-American this year. And I think that he plays up to that. I don't know if he's going to be able to be knocking down threes or long jumpers, but I just think he's going to be a better, more well-rounded player.
Coach, how about you?
Yeah. I'm a little out on that. And it doesn't take anything away from, you know, my appreciation for TJD. I think there are more weapons. I don't know that there's going to be as much of an emphasis of getting him the ball every time to a fault of the offense last time. And so I could see his numbers decreasing and the team play going improving and wins improving. And maybe the team success gets him to that All-American. I think he just misses.
That's what I think will happen.
I think he just misses All-American because it's, you know, just that's a real tough place to go to. And he's going to have to develop a lot. And I think he can, but his, you know, all the things we've said, the outside shooting, the right hand, all of those things, he gets it done because he is a great competitor and he hustles. And when he is locked in, he can be dominant. It's not because he has a bag full of skills that's NBA ready. If he had that, he'd have been gone. I don't know that he'll reach that All-American, but he'll be very, very solid.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to think of it, Coach. I don't know. You know, typically, the first and second teams are filled a lot with guys whose teams have had a ton of success, or they've really just been over the top from a statistical standpoint. And I don't know, to your point, whether he's going to end up being over the top from a statistical standpoint. I think the question then becomes how the team performs, and as the, you know, leader and star of a team that may outperform expectations, I think that really is what would propel him into that conversation. I do think he'll probably be on one of them from a preseason standpoint. I think if you look at toward the end of the season, I think a lot of that will be dictated on how the team plays. And if they really surprise people and finish toward the top of the Big Ten, and end up being top 25, you know, top 20, top 25 type team, then I think that becomes a more compelling argument, and maybe he doesn't get passed up by some people along the way. But I guess that's kind of how I compartmentalize, you know, the different things that would influence whether he'd be there or not. All right. Next one is really on the coaching. A few different people, Kevin, Mike, and Tom all talked about various aspects of the coaching staff. I'm all in with the coaching staff. Players are the guys that ultimately must play as a team to win, but the team starts with a good coaching staff, and I'm all in on them. Talked about providing swagger for the players and how a great staff can make good players great. So Coach, feels probably only fitting to throw a coaching one to you first. So, how are you feeling about the staff and the role they're going to play and where this team shakes out this season? We talked about a lot from a recruiting standpoint earlier on. What matters for now is the performance on the floor. So how do you look at the coaching staff?
I'm all in from what you can see. And what you can see is really good hires. I think a really good staff selection. I think he did a good job in getting players to stay and come out of the transfer portal and getting Tamar Bates. And it's, you know, really too early, even though we've maybe taken a few hits or no's on the recruiting trail. But what we've seen, I like the staff, and I was very hesitant at first. But I think not only basketball wise, but just community wise and the whole promotion of the program. And it just seems like there's a lot more juice outside towards the program and inside the program than there was under previous regimes. And so to me, that's exciting. Obviously, it's got to be offense and defense and game prep and rotations and all of that stuff that we do not know, and we could guess by what he's done in the past and what he's run, and there's been a lot of talk about the four out. We just don't know. We hope that his successes in formulating this program the way he has carry over into the technical part of it, and I don't see a reason why that shouldn't happen. But I can't sit here and say that they're going to be a great college basketball staff until you see it. But it's off to a great start. So I'm all in on this coaching staff. I'm excited to see what they bring.
Ryan?
Yeah, I obviously am impressed with what they've done so far. I'm kind of it. I put this at almost like a shrugged shoulder because I won't know until they get them on the court. You know, with all the momentum that's been built and all of that, I think that they've got a tough job ahead of them making a lot of new pieces fit. And that's not, you know, that's the danger of coming in as a new coaching staff and bringing in transfers and getting a late recruit and all that stuff. You got a lot of pieces, you know, to make fit into a puzzle and a limited time to do it. So I think this coaching staff has done a very good job. I was skeptical about some aspects of hiring Mike Woodson, but for most every move he's made, I've agreed with and thought was the right move so far and have praised him as such on this program repeatedly. I think he's done a really good job. The rubber is going to hit the road, though, when we start seeing him in the Bahamas and then the build up to the season and see what they can actually do, you know, what he can import from the NBA, what kind of stuff he's going to add that's more college oriented, how he's going to deal with having so many guys that, hey, transferred in. You don't transfer to sit on the bench. You transfer in to play. And because you weren't happy with your other situation. Now, a couple of these guys are multi-year transfers, all that stuff. So they might see the bigger picture of maybe they don't play as much this year, but they're setting up a role for next year, whatever. And then you've got the guys he commits to return, and they didn't return to sit on the bench. They returned to play. And so how does he put this all together? I think he's got a plan, and I feel good about it. But really, I don't think we're going to be able to answer it until we see what they do on the court. I would lean towards yes and lean towards being all in, but we'll see when things actually start to get real and the bullets start flying.
Yeah, this one's definitely hard to answer. I mean, I'm all in on the enthusiasm of it and what they've brought from that perspective. I think it's such a hard thing to really answer without totally understanding the system they're going to run and all those different pieces. But this feels like one where you're, at least at this point, based on what you see, you have reason to feel optimistic and to be excited. And I think that's good. And then the real test of this will
definite
be
optimism.
They get on the court and kind of go from there. So I'm all in on the optimism at the very least. So, all right. So last one's Phil and Chuck. This is kind of varying degrees of where you view IU in the Big Ten. So Phil said, I'm all in on IU shocking the Big Ten and challenging Michigan for the title. Chuck doesn't go quite as far, although one of these may be the most outlandish of all. All in on a top three Big Ten finish. Maybe that's not crazy, but championship game of the Big Ten tournament is it feels like a far bridge. So those are two different degrees of enthusiasm. But Ryan, you all in on either of those things, or do you think those are maybe a bridge too far for you? You're on mute. I mean, we've all been waiting for you to be on mute for years now, but
I know
it finally happened.
You just shouldn't have said anything. You just should have let me go for like 5 minutes, and then just kicked
gone
it
for a while. So, yeah,
seen my lips stop moving and just kick it to coach. It would have been great. Silence for everybody. Look, I love the optimism. I love the optimism. I cannot share that much optimism. I think that it's a process, and I think this is going to be year one of a process. I don't think it's a full scale tear it down rebuild like, you know, other people, like other teams have gone through and like other coaching changes have been, but it's hard for me to see them contending for a Big Ten title this year, especially again with all of the new guys you got to fit in and make feel good about themselves and all that. I think it's going to be a struggle. I think they're going to be good. I think this team is going to be better than last year for sure. And I think they're going to make the Big Ten, the NCAA tournament. A Big Ten, the championship game of a Big Ten tournament, that ain't happening. Come on, this is Indiana, guys. This is the Big Ten tournament is where dreams go to die for this university. So I'm gonna pass on that one. But yeah, I don't think they're going to be challenging for the Big Ten title this year. I think that they'll be in the mix with the good teams, maybe the top third of the Big Ten. But I think there's going to be some clear cut teams right off the bat who are out in front and going to make a run at it.
Coach, what about you?
I'm out on the contending stuff. I'm rooting for it. I'm going to cheer like heck for every game for it. But I'm out on the contending for the Big Ten championship, regular season or the tournament. I just think there's too many pieces to put together. I think we're in a good place. I wouldn't be shocked if 4, 5, 6 is where we end up landing. I think that would be very, very successful in first year with all of the pieces that have to be put together. And honestly, I'll probably be a little disappointed if we're below 7 or 8. You know, that's not why we made the change. So, you know, you're just stuck in that. Right now, I'm looking 5, 6 is where I think Indiana's going to be. I get why we're all excited because it's new and the program is, you know, pushing out social media and it's just a really, really good feeling. But, you know, every time you take over a program, there's stuff that you know, don't know, and you can't fix it all in June and July. It crops up in November and December and you know, sometimes you're fortunate to take over a program where you have a lot of good players coming back. And I think that's the situation that Coach Woodson is. So it's not like you're going to go to the bottom of a league and have to rebuild back up, but you're going to have to go to the middle of the league maybe, or just slightly above that middle of that league because of all of the strategies, the game, the rest, the rotations, all of that stuff trying to figure out in that first year. And you overcome that with great returning talent. And while I like all the guys, I don't think the talent that's returning is great besides TJD. Our incoming guys are expected to start. I mean, Xavier and Parker Stewart and Tamar Bates and Miller Kopp and all that. If they had been in the program, like when Michigan a few years ago, when they made their coaching change, they had a lot of returning guys that were really good for them to start over, and they jumped to the top right away. If we make that, that'll be great. I think there's a slight chance that would happen, but I think it's really slight. So I'm all out on all those. I don't want to call them crazy predictions because I really like them. And I love the fan base being excited again instead of negative. So, you know, make sure you keep making those, but be ready for a few L's here and there. And, you know, don't be disappointed with a 7, 8, 9, 10 seed in the NCAA tournament. Our name needs to be in that bracket, regardless of where the seed line is. That would be success.
Yeah, I think to your point, Coach, you've got a lot of you're expecting to do that. You'd need to see a lot of things from guys that you haven't seen so far. Either you haven't seen them in an IU uniform or you haven't seen them from the guys that are returning back. And so many things have to go right in a league like the Big Ten for it to materialize that way. You know, who knows? Now, the tournament piece can be a little bit of a crapshoot. I mean, despite what we would say about IU's less than storied history in that event, you know, I think, you know, those kinds of things can happen from time to time as you get teams that make a run. And maybe this is a team that really, because of all the new pieces, starts to peak later in the season. But I think the overall, you know, kind of high Big Ten finish predictions there just feel like a little bit too far for me, just given what we know about this team. And maybe
we appreciate them,
but maybe being burned by talking ourselves into the idealized versions of so many guys and so many teams over the past few years. So I would agree with what you guys said. I certainly appreciate the enthusiasm. It's a heck of a lot better than the depression that was setting in toward the end of last season. So hopefully, I hope to be proven wrong and that these guys can take a victory lap on us for how those actually work out. But, all right, well, that'll do it for that, the all-in segment, if you will. And so we're going to take another break, and we'll come back and answer your questions next, including the mediocre question of the week from Jay Horry. Stick around with us here on the Assembly Call.
It's amazing from the end of last year to now, the change in tone from the fan base.
Yeah. It's all great right, until game one, and then we see how it goes.
Oh, and so Denny, you've been here before is what you're saying, Andy.
Hope springs eternal in the offseason. Yeah, for sure.
Denny brings up a point in the chat mob, and from a coaching perspective, a lot of guys make shots in practice. And when you're doing a vlog, you're going to make sure you edit all the makes. You're not going to show any misses. That's why I like seeing that, because it shows a little bit of, you know, you get to see the guys doing it, but it's a promotional piece. And, you know, a lot of great shooters in our practices ended up going 2 for 14 in games because there's a little game pressure. So that's why I just wait until I see it on the court.
Yep, always.
All right, well, we'll hit these questions. I think very few of which are actually basketball related, as I recall from putting them in there. So we'll hit those.
Got about, 10, 12 minutes probably.
I mean, we can end whenever. We don't really have the same time restrictions as we once did, so we can do whatever.
Oh, I just meant for our sanity. I'm just kidding.
Coach Marlowe again, the Ted Lasso. It's the hope that kills you. Absolutely.
Yeah. It is.
Absolutely. All right. Let's go.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply.
At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
All right, welcome back to The Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and Ryan Phillips. Segment 3, which normally means only one thing, which would be our subscriber shout outs, but we're taking a week off from those this week. But do have a couple shout outs related to things in the community. As we talk about this every week, the questions that we're going to hit here are submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. But shout out to Robert Cooney, who has been doing some Peach Jam write ups in there related to at least a handful of guys that I use targeting. So he's put, kind of parts one and two of those of different days there. And then Jay Horry of the Mediocre Question posted in there about, football tickets going on sale from the Iowa website for the season opener at Iowa. So trying to organize a little bit of a meetup there, I think, for the IU fans heading out there, of which I believe coach is attending. So lots of good things going on in the community. So shout out to those guys. Tyler put in the chat, happy birthday to Jared. His Calbert Cheney 40th birthday was I believe yesterday. I'm not sure if I'm still, am I still on here? I do not know.
All right, so picking up, we're going to ask questions from our mailbag. Jay had the mediocre.
You might have to let Andy back in when he comes there, Coach. I don't know. Maybe not. Oh, here he comes. There he is. Hey.
I started talking about, pretty sure lost the audio of whatever you guys talked about while I was gone. But, I was talking about Jared's birthday, and then Google Chrome just decided to completely shut down. So
just crap out on you. Happens.
Good times, but happy birthday to Jared.
Technology,
happy birthday, Jared.
I think is where
we
I left
covered
off.
Nothing.
Okay, excellent work. I believe on there there'll probably be a part of me wondering what exactly happened because I thought it just opened a new window, which was clearly not the case. So anyway, Moving along, and we're back. All right, so might as well dive back in with...
It's not that good, but it's not that bad. It's Jay's Mediocre Question.
All right, from Jay Hurry. We actually got a more than one music-related question. Jay had this. If you could choose one musical act at one venue to be your first post-pandemic concert, which act and venue would you choose? He said his first was on Sunday, seeing the Avett Brothers at Red Rocks. Coach, I'll throw this one to you. I feel like you've got a good thought on this.
Yeah, it would be Jimmy Buffett outdoors. Probably in Key West would be great, but at Raufa or whatever that place is called here at Deer Creek, Noblesville. He was here last weekend, Saturday, but I had a family reunion get together, so I missed that opportunity. But I am seeing local Indiana, Bedford, Indiana guy Clayton Anderson tomorrow at the Ratskeller at the Beer Garden.
Who hasn't been there?
Yeah, it's a 99% chance of rain, though, tomorrow, 7, 8, 9. So my first concert, either maybe they'll move it indoor. I know they have. I've been to the Ratskeller indoor in one of their rooms. But the first time I get to go out and to a concert, and it's supposed to rain in Indy. But I will be seeing Clayton Anderson tomorrow evening as this is recorded, June 16th.
Nice. Well, I'm hoping the weather holds off for you, Coach, so that you can enjoy that in the outdoors. But that's a good one. Ryan, what about you?
So with this one, I'm going to go a little off the board and go with legendary LA punk band Social Distortion. I'd like to see them at the Bluebird. How about a tiny little venue? I would like to see them at the Bluebird. I'd also see them at any LA concert venue, since that's their thing. Post-pandemic, I would love to see them. I've seen them before at the House of Blues in LA. It was one of the best concerts I've ever been to. Just somebody that everybody I knew listened to growing up, and you know, had their little national hits and everything. Anybody who knows music knows who they are, but I would love to see them at a tiny, tiny venue like the Bluebird.
All right. Let's see. I'll go. Jay's thing about Red Rocks. I mean, I feel like somebody else this week had posted about there, just what a great place it is to see it. So as some place I've never been, I would, I guess I'll throw that out as the venue. The actual artist is a little bit difficult. It would probably be someone country music related, if I had to guess. Maybe Eric Church, who I've seen in concert indoors and was really good. But I guess I'll say him at Red Rocks for that. Although Jimmy Buffett was just here. I think he was here in Cincinnati somewhere around the same time as you mentioned, Coach. And there were some stories on the news about people trying to get in to start tailgating before 8 a.m. So always makes for a good day at the Jimmy Buffett concert, for sure.
A buddy of mine saw Dave Matthews at Red Rocks and said it was incredible.
Yeah, Red Rocks is a must-see venue.
It's a bucket list venue.
Yep.
All right. Well, sticking with the music, Jeff Marlowe, what is the best concert you have seen? His was Kiss with Ted Nugent as the opener.
Ted Nugent.
Go to me last. I got to think through a few.
All right.
Mine, Bruce Springsteen in Soldier Field in the late 80s. It was general admission, 75,000 general admission. We got there at 2. They opened the doors. And they opened the doors 2 hours early because the crowd was so big. And we got on the football field. And we were like 40 yards away from the stage when they started. I was like 20, 21. Started tuning up. There was a mad rush, just body slamming up.
Of course,
I ended
there
up
was.
Like 15 feet from the stage. He played for 3 hours. You could not get out of the little concaves. They were passing water over. And if someone passed out, we passed them over our heads to the people in the hallways. You know, they had a little hallway, and they were spraying. It was so hot in the summer. They were spraying fire hoses down on the crowd. And we were all, it was 3 hours of that. And I tell you what, OAR puts on a great, great concert. I've seen them in Indy a couple of times. So I went over with two, but Springsteen live at 80,000 in Soldier Field was fabulous.
Nice. That's a good one. Ryan,
maybe not 80, maybe 60. I think it only fits.
But I've come up with one.
You got yours yet? All right.
It was 2000, I believe. The Summer Sanitarium Tour at the LA Coliseum was Metallica, Korn, and Kid Rock with Power Man 5000 and System of a Down opening before they got famous, but Metallica was the thing. It was the Coliseum seats 100,000 people, at least it did back then. And obviously there was a stage that cut off some of it. So in the stands was probably like 75,000 people. And then the entire football field of the Coliseum was back to back the whole way. So it was probably well over 100,000 people for Metallica, who originally had planned, and they talked about in the paper the next day, they'd originally planned to play like 2 hours and 15 minutes. They wound up playing 3:20 because they said that they didn't expect that reaction, because they said LA is not a rock town anymore. And they kept coming out, like, because people wouldn't leave, and they kept coming out and playing. And I think it was Lars Ulrich, their drummer, said it was one of the top five concerts they've ever played. They said the reaction from the crowd was unbelievable. It was such a huge crowd and all that. It was incredible. Start to finish, that was like a 6 hour day in the stands there, because there were so many bands. I mean, Kid Rock played, and this is when he was at the height of his fame, was the, like, it was the two openers and then Kid Rock, and he played like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. Korn played 2 hours, and Korn nobody even knows anymore, but like at the time they were huge. They played 2 hours as the sun was setting. It was just a cool visual. And then Metallica came out and played like 3:15, and it was, I mean, just melt your face off, great concert.
Ryan, this has really given everybody a real view into your musical tastes in these last couple of
weeks. We went because my best friend, I kind of like everything. I like everything. I like rap. I love all of it. But that was my, that was a,
I'm not giving you a hard time.
No, but that was a birthday present. That those tickets were a birthday present to my best friend, who was the biggest Metallica fan on the planet. That's what I got him for his birthday that year. So it was all for him.
Nice. Let's see. I'm not sure. I may go back and amend my other one and say Pearl Jam at Red Rocks for my first question. I had more time to think about it. Maybe that would be it. For larger name, larger concert, probably be seeing Garth Brooks was one of the better ones that I've seen. He played for quite a while. Played a lot of obscure songs and stuff like that. That was good for, you know, smaller act, at least at the time. Saw Jason Isbell at a pretty small place here in Cincinnati when he was,
everybody says he's great live.
I think it was, I forget whether it was like first or second solo album, but still was like, you know, it was a smaller theater downtown here. That was a really good show. I've seen him a few times. So that was a good one as well, just on a smaller scale than a lot of the other ones that we've talked about. So I'll throw that one out there.
I'll have to add, I worked at Deer Creek Music Center here in Noblesville in 94, summer of 94, selling beer. And I was... two Grateful Dead concerts, and I had my beer cooler right on the right facing the grass, the lawn, and was able to get in and have and listen for free while making some money. I made the most tips ever each night at the Grateful Dead, because no one knew what they were handing me, and they really didn't care. I saw things that I've never seen before. Or since then, I've been offered payment for a beer with all kinds of different products. Picked up some hitchhikers on the way home. It was an incredible, experience. Grateful Dead.
I almost had to dig up the AC After Dark music there for that. That might be its own show. Crazy. When we get around to next week and we're not sure what we want to talk about, it may just be story time with Coach about these Grateful Dead shows, and then we'll call it a day.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure there are a lot of stories.
All right. Next one's from Valerie. Favorite vacation spot? She threw out a few here. I will not read through all these. She said she can't pick one because she loves diversity, so she threw out a few. Maui, Chicago, Washington coastline, Barcelona, you know, different places here. So she had a whole bunch. So Coach, any favorite vacation spots for you and the family?
I've never been to Italy. I'd like to get there. That's that's a bucket list for me. And we do a lot of sports traveling for games and venues and that in our family. So you name a city, we would like to go. But right now, our destination, where if you could tell me I could go this weekend, it would be Nashville, and just go Broadway and all the honky tonks and spend a weekend in Nashville, just living life. That would be the place that we've frequented the most currently. But yeah, Italy is my bucket list vacation.
All right, Ryan, yeah. favorite spot for you?
I love doing Maui, the week of the Maui Invitational. I think that's the perfect vacation. Getting a condo, not staying at a hotel, being able to be with family, a bunch of people, and doing Thanksgiving, but also getting to spend 3 days covering some of the best basketball in the country is perfect to me. If we got to pick, you know, something else, you guys have heard me talk about that a million times, but I loved St. John in the Caribbean. Went twice as a kid, went right after I graduated high school. My sister just graduated college and we had the best week ever. And then of course, Italy. If any of you ever go to Italy, reach out. And my family has that one on lockdown. We know everything you need to go. We know all the restaurants, everything you need to go. Just reach out through the community and I will give you the book that my mom keeps as a guide to anybody going to Italy. It's a magical place. And it's a place you will not want to leave because of how wonderful it is. So if sincerely to our listeners, you ever going to Italy, just reach out and we will set you up.
There you go. All right. For us, if we want to go to a beach, we really like Topsail, North Carolina, or Topsail, I guess is how everybody says there, but it looks like Topsail. So we've done that a few years, pretty not crowded and place to relax with a book and a beer and just kind of hang out by the beach. Otherwise, probably other favorite family vacation. I say this not just because we got to meet up with Ryan on the trip, but a few years ago, we did a California trip where we spent a few days in San Francisco, a few days in San Diego, a few days in LA. I think I did the order of those wrong, but did that. Just had a great time. Managed to get it in the summer before the pandemic and everything. So timing was good. Had a great time. We were just talking about that as a family as we were driving back from our other vacation, just kind of how much fun that was and getting to see and do different stuff. So I will throw those out. All right, next. All right, now we're back to basketball questions. So John, IU has given a lot of offers, had a lot of guys on campus. What recruits does IU have a realistic shot at landing? Any concerns? I think we probably touched on, you know, that piece of it earlier. How much does traditional recruiting even matter with the transfer portal? You know, Ryan, any thoughts on recruiting that you didn't share before, whether it's any specific guys that feel like there's a realistic shot? I think we touched on some aspects of this question earlier in the show.
Yeah, look, I do think that traditional recruiting is going to be different with the transfer portal because you're going to see a lot of guys coming as freshmen, were sold a bill of goods, and then didn't live up to their expectations. So I think that certainly is going to happen. I don't think that, and a lot of people are saying, you know, that they think the transfer portal will calm down, whatever. I think that out will always exist. And I think coaches will be held to having to play guys that maybe aren't ready to play because they don't want to lose them because they think they'll be good in year two or three. Well, they got to play them as freshmen because if they don't, those guys are gone. And so I think that's going to be really interesting. I think depth chart is going to start to matter a lot to kids more than it does now because, hey, if I don't get any run in my first year, I'm going to go look at that spot where there is nobody in front of me and I can go be a starter. So I do think that traditional recruiting, as we've seen it for a long time, is sort of out the window a bit. As for guys who I think Indiana can get, I think Jalen Hood Schifino. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but we'll call him JHS. He's a guy they really seem to be on, and who really seems to like Indiana. And that one will be interesting to see how that plays out. He's out of Florida. At Montverde Academy, which is a basketball factory. And it appears that things have really picked up in that one and Indiana's doing pretty well. So that's a guy, if you're looking at a top level recruit, he may be the kind of guy that Indiana can go get.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see, do you fill 13 scholarships? Do you go for that one or two five-star, four-star athlete that, you know, as Ryan said, could come in and play right away, that you're not adverse to playing right away? Do you sprinkle in one or two guys where you say, hey, you're coming in, but you're going to sit for two or three years, who just loves the university? Do those guys get recruited anymore? Or do they go somewhere else for a year or two and then say, hey, prove yourself there, and then we'll come back and look at you in your freshman or after your freshman or sophomore year? There's just so much up in the air with the transfer portal, with recruiting overall. I am interested in, we'll go JHS, so I don't butcher the name. Sounds like he's been playing pretty good. The community stuff that was put in with the summer work, it sounds like he might be the next big fish that Indiana's looking at. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But yeah, I just think recruiting is going to be different in the next 2 or 3 years until this thing has a time to flush its way through a full cycle. And so coaches know.
All right. Last question from Valerie. What game is looking good for the Assembly Call homecoming? Answer to that is we don't know because we don't have the actual schedule out. We usually try to look at that once it's there because it almost has to be a weekend. We got to try to avoid, make sure that there's times that coach doesn't have coaching obligations and some of those kinds of things. So that usually is the determining factor as we go through that. So we'll definitely look at that when we know more about the schedule and all that stuff, but we do not know right now. So, all right. Well, that is going to do it for the questions this week. We appreciate those. Some good non-basketball questions to hit as well. Good time for that. Good time of year to hit those. So, appreciate everybody submitting those. And that'll do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Special thanks to Bob Thompson for producing a lot of music that you hear on the show. And thank you for listening. Talk to you again next week or sooner if any news breaks. But until then,
take it from me, Freddie Mac Swain Jr. Keep your elbows in, your eyes on the rim, and man, go up and dunk the ball. Go Hoosiers.
I like everything about that.
All right. Fellas, appreciate it. Good seeing everybody. Like I said, some good off-topic questions, good music questions to hit. So,
man, the musicians were really, really solid.
That's fun. You guys can ask us you guys can ask us non-basketball questions anytime. Well, those are fun. Yeah.
I've seen Run DMC.
You saw Run DMC?
Yeah, it was called the New York City Fresh Fest in Illinois, Chicago, when I was just in high school or college. Houdini, the Fat Boys.
The Fat Boys, too?
The Fat Boys. Man. Yeah. Curtis Blow was there. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I retroactively hate you for going to this concert.
Yeah.
By the way, 23 minutes in, U.S. is up 2-0 on Martinique. Daryl DK with 2 goals.
Eric Clapton. I've seen Eric Clapton.
Oh, that's
that was
good one.
A great show.
I saw
Mellencamp. Mellencamp in the football stadium, Memorial Stadium, Little Five, 1986.
Oh wow, that's a good one. Let's see. I saw Stone Temple Pilots in San Diego. They're from San Diego. A couple of the guys are from San Diego, and they finished their tour here twice, and it was awesome. Just unbelievable. They actually, at one point, they had an acoustic set, and they brought one of the guys' parents' living room on stage. Like, it was backstage, and they just rolled it out. And it was their entire living room set up, and they just sat on it and played for a while. It was great. That was a memorable one. That was in high school. They used to do a show in downtown San Diego before they put the stadium in and actually like built it up. Downtown San Diego was basically bars and abandoned warehouses for a long time. And so they had all this room, all these streets that led to sort of nothing. And so they did a concert called Street Scene here that was like 3 days. And there were two main stages, like in an L the street was basically an L shape. And at the end of each street, they would put a stage up, and they were just, I mean, it was just concerts all day, and that was awesome. I think I'm trying to see. So at one point in a row, it was Busta Rhymes live, who's incredible live, which, so it's not just a clever name. I think I saw Flogging Molly was in there, Bad Religion. And then the other side, it was like Stone Temple Pilots again, because they always came to San Diego. I mean, it was like, not only was it those two main stages, but as you're walking along, there was like a beer garden where people were playing. There was, you know, there was probably at any one time, 6 musical acts playing, and it was awesome. Just so cool.
Did you ever enjoy Summerfest up while you were in Milwaukee?
I didn't, because I was working in the middle of Summerfest every year. But I really wanted to. And then and I want to go back. And the 1 year that I did have a chance to go, like it was the 1 year that Summerfest was kind of an off year. And then the concerts I did want to go to were all sold out quickly. So yeah, I definitely missed out on Summerfest. I also know it's funny. I never went to Madison while I lived in Milwaukee either. It was 45 minutes away. Like I never went to
Summerfest. for those people in the Midwest is well worth it. They have the main stage, like, you know, you got to have a ticket to get in concert, but then they have six or seven different stages. And sometimes they bring in some really good name people on those side stages. And then
it's similar to what I was talking about in San Diego.
Right.
It's
That's what made me think about it. And then the best one was there's an improv stage in a tent.
Yeah.
Where they were
and there's
just
like
doing
comedians
improv.
And stuff.
Yeah. It was fantastic. And you have brats and you have all kinds of beer. And
yeah. If you have a chance to go up to that, I recommend anybody go. Everybody raves about it. I've never been, but everybody raves about Summerfest being one of the best concert experiences in the country. And it goes on for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And it's good act after good act after good act. And the venues are supposed to be awesome. I also saw, who was a good one I saw in Bloomington? I saw G Love and Special Sauce at Bluebird, and they played for like 3 hours. They and their opener actually was a girl named Tristan Prettyman, who was standing there and said, like, yeah, I grew up in Del Mar in California, and my buddy went to the same high school as her. He found out, like, he was 2 years ahead of her at the same high school. So that was weird. Who else I see? I saw whatever Jake's Axis, whatever that was a concert venue for a minute. We saw Better Than Ezra there, you know, just a random, that concert's playing on a Friday. You're like, yeah, why not? Yeah, well, that's good. It's a good one. I like going to small venues for concerts like that though.
Small venues. Sometimes you find some real stars too, that aren't big. That's why I like the Nashville scene too. Sometimes you just run into people that are really, really good in that small venue. That vibe is pretty cool.
I was at a bar in LA, and there was this kind of disheveled guy at the bar, and he didn't look dirty or anything, but he just kind of looked like he wasn't put together well or whatever. And I was like, he must know the owner or something, 'cause he wouldn't have walked in here looking like that, whatever. He's in like flip flops or whatever. This is a Friday night on like Sunset in LA. You gotta be dressed up. You gotta look nice. And turns out it was Jack Johnson. And he went up on stage and played for a little bit. He was just kind of there hanging out. And he did know the owner. And the owner was like, Jack, go play something. Your drink's on me. Go play something. He was like, all right. So he went up and sat there for like half an hour.
Pancakes.
And just, yeah. I mean, he just played some songs. I was like, I knew he was somebody. There's no way you get in here looking like that. What about you, Andy? Any other good ones?
I'm trying to think. I saw Mellencamp was there for Little Five when I was there. It was at Assembly Hall, actually.
It was,
and Tim Garl was a handful of rows down. He was rocking out to the Coug. Let's see. I'm trying to think what others. I'm trying to think what else I would have went to in Bloomington. I saw Bob Dylan while I was in Bloomington at the IU Auditorium.
What did you guys see at the auditorium while you were in school?
Sam Kinison.
That's a great one, actually. I'm surprised the university let him.
I believe I saw Bill Cosby, which is not as great.
Wow, that does not hold up.
No, that did not.
I saw
not stand the test of time.
Homecoming in 2003, my first year on campus, Jerry Seinfeld was there, and he was at the football game too. Wow. And then he came out, and he basically, his first thing was ripping on IU's football team, which is like, you guys are good at other things. It's okay. And who else did I see there? I saw Incubus. The girl I was dating really wanted to see Incubus really badly. And I was like, all right, thank you. And then I saw Les Miserables there, which is a great play if anybody has.
That's quite the trifecta of
I know. It's
of the arts that you were able to take in.
Oh, I saw Ben Folds 5 too. That was about it. But yeah, that's quite a mix up.
Yeah, absolutely.
A mashup.
All right, cool. All right, I'm going to we can save some of this for next time, but I need to wrap up so I can get this sent. Tell my kids goodnight. Do all that good stuff. And it's 10:30, so.
Yeah.
Oh, well, cool. All right. Excellent conversation. Appreciate everybody joining us on a mid-July evening, and we will talk to everybody next week.
See later, guys.
Thanks.
This Halloween.
No, that's impossible.
Don't get caught.
Did you check the basement or the bedroom?
Without the perfect thing.
They're both out.
To treat every taste.
Well, that's it. We're out of Fanta.
No!
This Halloween, don't live with the horror of being without Fanta. Get yours today.
At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here.